In 1944, hundreds of Allied soldiers were trapped in prisoner of war camps in occupied France, fighting brutal conditions and unsympathetic captors. The odds of their survival were long, the odds of escaping even longer. But one man had the courage to fight odds. In Behind Nazi Lines, my father's heroic quest to save 149 World War II POWs, Andrew Hodges tells the true story of his father's brave mission behind enemy lines to negotiate the safety of prisoners. Dr. Andrew Hodges Jr. is the firstborn son of World War II hero Andrew Hodges. He is a psychiatrist in private practice and has served as assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Alabama at Birmingham School of Medicine. He has helped pioneer a breakthrough to the brilliant unconscious mind, which he explained in his book, The Deeper Intelligence. The new book is Behind Nazi Lines, My Father's Heroic Quest to Save 149 World War II POWs. And we welcome Andrew Hodges to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, it's nice to be with you.
Very nice to have you here. What led you to want to tell your father's story, assuming that you've known the important aspects of the story for a long time?
We did. It was time to tell it. I knew if it didn't get told now, it wasn't going to be told by me anyway. And there'd been a documentary in 2002, and we saw the effects of that. But this was last November of 2014 was the 70th anniversary of one of the two major POW swaps that he arranged and proposed and negotiated. And there was an anniversary celebration in Pornic, France, and they named a street after my father in honor of where the exchange was and that he got these men out. And that was part of it. We knew this was coming on. It was just time to tell it. And, everything unfolded, and my co-writer knew him well, too, and she didn't know all the stories, but she sure knew him, and we thought it'd be a great story. We hope it is. We think it is.
Growing up, how much did you know about the story? When did you start to learn and appreciate the story?
Yeah. Okay. Two questions. I heard the stories all my life, and they were great stories. My father was a great storyteller, but he just told it to the family. He didn't tell it to my brother and I and, a few people. But I heard the stories. I was impressed with them from a kid. He talked about negotiating and going into behind enemy lines and facing these Nazis and, could have been killed at any moment and 15 trips behind Nazi lines. So I knew the stories and these dramatic negotiations and the risk he took and the people running into German barricades and sentries coming out pointing guns at him and the French fishermen not wanting to take him into German, across the river into German lines. I heard all these stories. But to appreciate them takes time. I grew into that, and even as I did this book, I appreciated them more. I mean, the book, I tell you, I reread it at times, and it brought tears to my own eyes after writing it, so when we put it together. So that's the story.
In assuming that there was some humility there, he's not coming in telling you the story that this is my heroic quest.
No. No, the man that was responsible for a documentary about this that was shown nationwide in 2002, and a university helped sponsor it, he got the story out of my father. He was on a board with my father, and Dad just alluded to it and said, "No, I didn't do much in World War II." And the man was a retired military colonel, and he appreciated the story, and he was responsible for it. So he didn't tell this man just got it out of my father, and he saw the value of it, and made the documentary, and then we told the story, and all the drama came together, and we met some of these POWs years later. So, yeah, he didn't just brag about the story at all. It's quite the opposite.
Right. So talk a little bit about how this is set up and what put your father in that position to do this heroic act.
Well, he had had a football injury. He got to college on a football scholarship. The only way he could have gone, had a football injury, hurt his shoulder, was ineligible physically to join the service, ended up joining the Red Cross, had to be involved. He was attached to the 94th Infantry. He's in central France right after D-Day with the American forces, and they're pushing the Nazis back. There were prisoner of war POW camps, American POWs, and we had their German prisoners. And American POW snuck a letter out, just a miracle, hoping this Hail Mary letter, hoping it would get through, and it did. It came to the 94th Infantry, and the Major General gave it to my father to take these men's supplies. They were starving in the prison camps and freezing, and he was going to try to go into Nazi lines and negotiate, and so he ended up risking his life, going behind the lines to first be able to take them supplies, and then the second swap, major swap that he carried out, the Germans didn't want to give up particularly a key person, and how he negotiated that and how he out-negotiated them is a great part of the story. So you have a master negotiator that he was in terms, you know, that he learned early on and in his background to dealing with people. And so you have these stories of the swaps and how they came to be and the courage it took.
In the story, and as you say, of talking to those POWs, what do you get from them? Obviously, there's so many perspectives. Many are gone. So, what is their perspective? Is it universal, or do they all have sort of a different account?
Well, now I think what stood out is that every man had a story, and every man had a purpose, and everybody was convinced they were doing the right thing, and it gave them a lot of courage. And they just did their job when they were called. A lot of these were really young men in private first class, that, you know, they 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, men in college that just dropped out to come over and do their job. And it was my dad's similar boat. He didn't expect to have to go behind lines and experience the risk of combat and all that, and he just did his job. But the POWs all had a story, and my father used to talk about, look, I didn't do as much as they did, come on. And it was just a great story. They all came together. That stood out to me.
Do you think this, since your career is in psychology and psychiatry, I'm curious as to whether you think that growing up the way you did and growing up with these stories had an impact of wanting to know why people do the things the way they do.
You know, my father was a storyteller, which everybody has a story, and stories are very important to us. And I think intuitively, I certainly grew up with trauma in terms of my father being away, and there's a lot of trauma about our fathers having been overseas for a lot of people, and you don't realize it. And so I think we all want to figure things out. So yes, it did affect me. It made me curious, and I began to understand the effects that World War II had on us. And I've ended up being basically a negotiator. I specialize in in-depth therapy, and people come in and they want to do this, and I help them make decisions, and they really don't want to do something. So that these kind of two parts of the mind, and I have to negotiate with them, and I stay out of their way, and then I say, look, you tell me you want to do this, but you really want to do this, and I try to show them their need. And that's where my father came in terms of negotiating. He always showed the Germans their need. You want these troops? Let's arrange a swap here. You have a need. You want more combat people? Well, let's get them to you. So yes, it affected me, and I drew on that experience of his negotiation skills. Every day, still draw on it.
One of the things that struck me about his story and what you write about in the book is the ingenuity. The idea of how you think and how it can get you out of a particular situation. And I'm curious of what struck you in that regard about your father.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and this was true for a lot of the soldiers. They had to do whatever was called for, but they had to come up with something. They had to adapt, and life is a lot about adapting. And so my father, in one of these swaps, he's bringing 10 Germans over to one to their side, and then bringing 10 Americans back. The boat would only hold 10, and the boat stopped in the middle of the river, and the ceasefire was very short that day. But my father had brought an extra can of gas, and the fishermen didn't think he was out of gas, but they put gas in the boat, and the swap was completed. And just he thought enough to, let's take some extra gas here, and the French fisherman who was running the boat, they depended on this French fisherman, he was there, and all these men had to adapt. And so my father adapted. He didn't know they were going to blindfold him and to negotiate and blindfold him for 4 hours and put him in a room surrounded by 4 German officers, but he had to adapt to negotiation conditions, and so it was constant ingenuity.
And that ingenuity is it some, as you say, it was fairly common for soldiers of having to figure their way out of a very tough situation.
Yes, yes. And this book in particular, because a lot of times the lines were not clear when it was occupied, where the Nazi-occupied territory was, where the American territory was, so they found themselves in a lot of uncertain conditions. And a lot of these men got captured unexpectedly and then had to adapt. Yes, a lot of uncertainty.
Do we do enough, do you think, to highlight the heroic acts of men and women during this particular war and just in our history in general, do you think?
I think we need that today. I think you have to meet a need of a person, and I think we need heroes. And I think heroes are hard to find, and now particularly, but we need heroes, and I think it's the people that go looking for them, and I think there's something fundamental in people. Everybody wants to be a hero, and everybody's important, and everybody wants a hero to identify with and to build into them and to get great things out of them, the very best out of them. And so we intuitively migrate towards heroes, some people more than others, and some people, you know, want to know more than others. But I think it's an intuitive, it's certainly a deep need. We're all important human beings, and so we have this need for heroes because we want the best out of ourselves.
And I guess, and I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but one of the things that is so incredible about the story is just the number of people who were saved. I mean, 149. I mean, that's an amazing number.
But 149 individual men with families back home. And what was so striking is a lot of these men are worried about their families, thinking
sure.
They're dead when they're not, and my mother's going to be upset, and my father's going to be upset, and I'm living, and I just wish they knew. And, you know, it's just all these fascinating interactions. It's everybody had a story, and you just see there's a very human story in this book because my father negotiated with the Germans on the basis of they were human beings. He knew how to treat them. He knew how to treat people growing up, dealing with people since he worked in a general store from age 10 on, and he knew how to deal with people and meet their needs. And so that's what we have to do in negotiations and still stand up for our needs. And so there are a lot of stories here.
Well, the story is quite incredible, and the book is riveting. It is Behind Nazi Lines, My Father's Heroic Quest to Save 149 World War II POWs. The book is published by Berkeley Caliber. Andrew Hodges, Jr., thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.